A group of retired military officers is urging the Pentagon to beef up plans for dealing with the impact of climate change. The advice comes in the form of a 68-page report published today, or yesterday, from the Center for Naval Analyses, the CNA Corporation. They say the risk has accelerated and that climate change is a catalyst for conflict. Retired Rear Admiral Dave Titley is a member of the CNA Corporation Military Advisory Board and a former Navy oceanographer and navigator. He tells us what the CNA is recommending to current military leaders.
It's really two things. We need to strengthen our resilience, and we need to stabilize the climate. So the strengthening the resilience is get ready for the changes that we've already baked in, no pun intended, to our climate system. And stabilize the climate means ultimately we have to stop or at least slow down the rate of change there. We need to guard against a failure of imagination. And when we're putting in new infrastructure, new tactics, techniques, and procedures, new procurement, we need to make sure that we're looking forward and not backwards. A lot of times we look at what the historical weather or climate was, and we need to look forward and not backwards.
Well, the fact that you wrote a similar call for action during the George W. Bush administration leads me to wonder, how has the military taken you up on these recommendations since that last report, back in 2007?
Right, in 2007, the 2007 report was really one of the first major reports linking climate change as a national security issue. And it's not like the Department of Defense has done nothing. I mean, far from it. Climate change was identified in both the 2010 and 2014 quadrennial defense reviews. The Navy stood up in 2009 Task Force Climate Change with a focus on the Arctic, and just 2 months ago, Chief of Naval Operations John Greenert re-released updated five-year plan for the Arctic. What the CNA MAB report is calling for, though, is these reports are all very good, but it's now going to be time to, like, start setting real requirements, especially for the Arctic, and that comes from the combatant commanders, so that the services, especially the Navy, can then start building to those requirements. So reports are good, but now it's time for action.
And what might those requirements look like?
Well, the requirements, as you think about, especially the Arctic, this new operating environment, as the Arctic becomes ice-free in the summertime, late summertime and early fall, what type of surface ships might be required? And again, our report doesn't get into the specifics of exactly what those ships would be doing, what those missions would be doing. We really think that's between the combatant commands and the services to figure out. But what we note is that we haven't really seen that discussion going, and we have not seen the set of requirements. So without, sort of turning that proverbial 3,000-mile screwdriver, but we would like to see that discussion and ultimately reflected in both procurement strategies and the budget.
Well, as an example, ice can be harmful or even impede ships entirely. So if an iceberg or a piece of ice could harm a standard ship, you're calling for ice-hardened ships and also the acceleration of development of new ice-breaking ships. So it seems like that would involve Congress, too, to be able to, for the military to have the funds and the plans to do that.
Well, of course it does. Anything with budget involves a congressional leadership and the both the Senate and the House. So yes, that is a true statement. So I would look at this as really without getting into the politics of climate and climate change, you can just simply look at the changing battle space in the Arctic, the changing physical battle space in the Arctic, and say what type of capabilities does our nation need to be able to carry out the types of missions that the United States Navy frankly carries out in the rest of the world.
And does your report look at how the military should itself shore up its own resources in light of climate change? You've mentioned requirements, I assume, for new vehicles or for new equipment. But what about the things that the military has to work with now, both in terms of its limitations and its resources?
Well, this is it's a great point, Emily, that, you know, we all know that the budgets are, in fact, tightening. And, you know, the last thing sometimes people want is a new mission area when you have the tightening part. And it's not a mission that the Department of Defense has asked for. But, it's that change in the physical battle space. As far as what we have right now, this is really where we talk about strengthening resilience. we have the bases, we have our training infrastructure that we have. So how do we make sure that that will be remain effective as both the precipitation patterns change, so increasing droughts and floods? How do you deal with, let's say, more black flag days? How do you deal with droughts that when you dry up the ranges to the point where you can't even do live fire? And then finally, and especially for the Navy, but for all services, how do you deal with bases on the coast that are subject to rising sea levels and potentially greater storm surges? How do you keep not only them effective, but the communities in which our civilians, soldiers, sailors, airmen, Marines live and work? Because those bases, ultimately, that's how we generate readiness. So the bases are critically important to us.
And so I guess to summarize, then, there's really an operational military side to all this, as well as an external threat that the military might have to deal with side to this. That fair way to characterize what you've have come up with?
I think, Tom, that's a great way to put it. You know, I kind of look at, you know, if you take a look at the effects on the military, there's really three of them. We see a greater demand as we have increasing humanitarian assistance and disaster relief missions, and that could particularly fall on the National Guard. And that's a demand that's coming as we're talking about downsizing our military. We have these challenges to readiness that we just talked about, especially on our infrastructure. And then finally, we have these new operating missions, which we talked about in the Arctic, and in a harsher environment. Again, higher temperatures, the droughts, the greater potential for fires. It's not that our military doesn't know how to work in those conditions, but we may see more of them and even more extreme than what we've experienced to date.
Realizing that this report is just out, it's brand new, but still, how would you assess current military leaders' views on this vis-a-vis your own? Do you think that they see eye to eye with you?
I think, well, you would have to ask. You would really have to ask them. I mean, I can just take a look, though, at the public statements of our leaders. We have heard Secretary Hagel speak out both in Halifax and again recently on specifically on the Arctic, but on the climate change issue. Admiral Sam Locklear, the commander of U.S. forces in the Pacific Command, has stated publicly that when he looks at his area of responsibility that I think most of your listeners know include China, include the South China Sea, Korea, he sees climate change as a major threat. We have seen the U.S. African Command very, very interested in this. And, of course, as I said, the Navy has now for 5 years being very active at taking a look at how are the changes in the Arctic going to be reflected in new operating environments and capabilities. So it's not like the DoD is not doing anything. Our report, though, is saying, are we matching? Are we doing enough for this accelerating risk that we are seeing really almost every day?